Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying story is about a married couple going to visit the in-laws. I know, that could be horrifying all in itself, right? But they have to go through the deep woods into this mountain town. And when they get there, all hell breaks loose. Literally. Now let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Three months ago, my wife and I were on our way to visit my mother-in-law, living alone far up in the White Mountains. I had been driving for 5 hours, and my wife, Betty, started saying that she needed to use the bathroom and that she was starving. My full bladder agreed with her on the first issue, though I also had tried to make good time and get there before nightfall, when the street signs would become harder to read. I'd never been to Betty's mother's house before, or even the county it laid in. I pulled the car over to the side of Main Street, looking down the center of the town. It had everything a small, rural American town usually had. Quaint houses with blue siding, 24-hour diners, hardware stores and tobacco shops, liquor stores and restaurants. Majestic mountains rose all around us, and the town itself was so high that I could see for miles. The air smelt clean and sweet. Everything was here, except... "No people," my wife said, as if reading my mind. I looked over at her, frowning. "Yeah, this is bizarre," I said. "This place looks like it was hit by the Black Death. Where is everyone?" My wife unlocked her door and got out, pulling a cigarette from her purse and lighting it. She gave the pack to me, and I took one. My wife looked pale and thin under the late afternoon sun, her black hair and dark eyes contrasting heavily with her light Irish skin. Lately, she seemed to have lost weight, but she wouldn't talk about it. Every time I asked her if anything was wrong, she said no, and I could get no more response from her than that. The fragrant Turkish tobacco of the Camel cigarette instantly woke me up. We didn't smoke in the car, as it was brand new and had cost me over 25 grand that I didn't really have. The last thing I wanted was burnt marks on the seats and ashes flying everywhere. We walked slowly down the sidewalk, looking around, searching for the slightest signs of movement. I didn't even see an animal, except for the occasional fly buzzing past on its way to eat garbage. I looked into the diner window and saw plates set on the tables. Mold grew wild on the food, strange patches of green and red and black sprouting filaments and making the dishes unrecognizable. Next to the plates, I saw cell phones and even car and house keys. All the screens on the phones looked black, as if they had been sitting there for months. A slight layer of grime and dust had settled over everything. The doors stood wide open, a cheerful sign reading, "We're open, come in," displayed on the front. "That's gotta be a code violation," I said, pointing inside to the disgusting plates of mold and fungus. My wife laughed, but it sounded nervous and high-pitched, almost desperate in its cadence. "Listen, Betty, do you think we should maybe call the police or something?" She looked at me for a long moment, then sighed. I mean, I don't know, she said. What crime has been committed? It's just an empty town. Maybe everyone's at a funeral. Her voice raised, hopefully. I laughed. And they just abandoned their shops and restaurants with no workers and moldering food? And by the way, there's a cop car right there, I said, pointing. It sat on 4 flat tires, covered in a thick coat of dust. The tires didn't look damaged in any way. It seemed like they just lost pressure over time without anyone to care for them. Looking around at the other cars, I saw most were not in much better shape. Many of them had low or no air in their tires, and their windshields were covered in dirt and grime. It looked like a junkyard in the middle of a town, a junkyard that had been abandoned. I'm calling the cops, I said, pulling out my phone. I opened the screen and, of course, found I had no service. I tried sending a text to my mother, explaining the situation, and telling her to call the authorities if she received it, and send help immediately. I gave her the name of the town and the time. I figured the chances of a text going through was far better than a call, since a brief moment of service could prove sufficient to transfer the message. Yeah, I'm not calling the cops. I shook my head. We don't have a shred of service out here. What kind of town doesn't have service in its own main street? We're in the middle of the mountains, Betty said. Who the hell knows out here? We kept walking down the street in silence. Betty went inside a few of the shops and tried flicking on the lights or looking for a phone. The electricity apparently was as dead as the town itself. I occasionally checked my phone, finding nothing had changed. As we walked further along, I started to give up hope that help would be coming from outside. I finished my cigarette, and Betty lit another one and gave me the pack again. I sighed and took another Camel out of the pack, lighting it and inhaling deeply. It gave me something to do, at least, and it helped take my mind off of the strangeness of this town. Then we came up to the police station, and I choked on the smoke as I saw what laid there before us. At first, I thought some vandal had used red spray paint to put up a bizarre slogan across the front of the station. And then I saw all the flies and smelled the copper and iron, and I realized it likely wasn't paint at all. We found the Black Sun, it said in huge letters, each of them nearly 6 feet tall and thickly painted across the windows and walls. My wife squinted at it, tilting her head in a girlish way, her black hair falling across her face. She took a long, thin hand and pushed it aside. The Black Sun? She said. Is that a metal band? It sounds like those Norwegian Satanists you like to listen to. What's the name? Burzum and Dark Throne and stuff? She started walking forwards, trying to inspect the letters more closely. I put my hand on her shoulder and pulled her back with a little more force than I intended. She stumbled and gave me a dirty look. Johnny, be careful, damn it. You almost made me fall. Sorry, I said, my heart pounding in my chest. But don't get close to that. I'm fairly sure that's blood. And it might be a crime scene. You don't want to touch it or trample the area if it is. She looked at me shocked, then glanced back at the letters, seeing the flies swarming around the coagulated sticky mess. Animal blood? She asked hopefully. Yeah, sure, I guess, I said noncommittally. Okay, let's go back to the car and get the hell out of here. I've seen enough. We need to get the cops here. Whatever is going on here, it's way beyond anything we could deal with. I turned around quickly, leaving my wife's hand. She pulled away. Don't start getting all worked up, she said. We haven't seen any indication of anything crazy. Not yet. All we know is that the people are somewhere, not here, and that someone vandalized the police station. I want to keep exploring. I looked at her amazed. She pointed past me to an old-looking church built out of stone, probably from the 1800s. It stood near the end of the small downtown area, next to a thick...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Cluster of evergreen trees. It had a plaque outside that I couldn't make out. The doors stood wide open, and the darkness inside seemed to beckon. For a moment, I almost agreed with Becky. I almost said that I, too, wanted to go inside that church. I think it was what the French call l'appel du vide, or the call of the void. The urge to suddenly jump when standing at the edge of a cliff, or to see if a car can go 130 miles an hour on the highway when it's snowing. Then I shook my head quickly, as if awakening from a short dream. I looked back at Betty and laughed. There was no humor in it, however. "You must be crazy," I said. "I want to get the hell out of here, now. There's nothing to explore. Everyone's gone, and if we keep going deeper into this, I have a feeling we will run into something far worse than anything we've seen yet."
"Okay, how about this?" she said, making a thoughtful face, putting her finger up to her chin. "Why don't you see if the cop car is unlocked, jump it with our own car, and use whatever they have in it to call for help? They probably have a walkie-talkie or something connected to the state police network. If you really think we need a SWAT team here, then that's probably the quickest way."
"No, let's just leave," I said, walking quickly back in the direction of our car. I saw the new Chevrolet Trailblazer off in the distance, contrasting heavily with the dirty and abandoned cars surrounding it. And then, as we got close, I saw it had 4 flat tires. I started running towards, seeing the deep knife marks slicing open each of the sidewalls. "What in the hell?" I said, stopping in my tracks. I looked around the town, but still saw no trace of anyone. "Why? Why would someone do this?"
"To stop us from leaving, obviously," my wife said, sounding unperturbed. "Look, we might be here for a while, so I'm going into the package store to grab a few things. Maybe some wine and some cigarettes, because someone smoked most of mine."
She narrowed her eyes at me playfully. "Do you even realize what's happening right now?" I asked, my voice rising unconsciously in anger and frustration.
"No, do you?" she said.
"This isn't a joke," I said, feeling hot and anxious. "We're trapped here, and there's letters written in blood, and now someone slashed our tires. Do you still think we don't need the police?"
She smiled at me. "You always worry too much," she said. "Just calm down for once. Don't have an anxiety attack on me. There's no cell phone service to call for help if you do, remember?"
That jogged something into my memory, and I looked questioningly at her. "Do you have any weapons on you?" I asked. "I have..." I reached into my pockets, frowning. I pulled out a small Swiss Army knife. Its red surface looked dull from age, and even I thought it looked small and pathetic in my hand. "This." She laughed. "What are you going to do with that? Kill a chipmunk?" she asked.
I mean, I think you could cut your nails with it too, if you want to use a dull, crappy pair of scissors that barely cut paper. She laughed at her own joke, then stopped when she saw the anger and fear on my face. Betty looked at me with a strange expression. It was hard to perturb her. She had always been different from me. When I was stressed about money or work or anything else, she would laugh it off and say I was too serious. But this seemed to be stretching the boundaries. I felt in my heart we were in danger, and she didn't seem to notice. "Look," she continued, sighing. "Let's go get some more cigarettes and drinks and stuff, and then maybe we could take the car over to the police cruiser and jump it. Then we could call the cops and AAA too, and just sit here and wait for the cavalry to arrive." I sputtered. "This is a brand new car," I yelled. "I'm not driving on its rims over there. That's going to destroy the rotors and could damage some other stuff." I didn't actually know anything about cars, and she knew it. "No, I think it will be fine," she said, smiling. "But I wouldn't get my..." Her words were cut off by a siren that started up suddenly, deafening and shrill. It seemed to vibrate the air itself, and the dead town came to life in a cacophony of noise and vibration. I saw my wife's lips moving as she tried to scream something, but I had no idea what it was. I covered my ears with my hands, which barely helped. And then, after about 10 seconds, it stopped. My ears rang a high-pitched whine, like I had just walked into a flashbang. It went away slowly, and Betty's voice came back to me, rising from nothingness in a crescendo, until I could make out her cadence and speech again. "Into the siren," she said, her face unusually serious and drawn. The sun had started to go behind the mountains now, sending long shadows streaking across the road. Soon, it would be dark, and we would likely be trapped here for the entire night, or longer. Hiking out here was an option, and the highway was only about 5 miles away. These thoughts passed through my mind as I saw shadows fall over Betty, before I realized I had no idea what she had said. "What?" I yelled. "I said," she rolled her eyes at this point, "we should go towards the siren. They have electricity. They probably have a landline and maybe have people there," she said, still speaking far too loudly. I guessed her ears were ringing as well. "Okay, you don't have to yell," I said. "I can hear you. I don't want to attract the wrong kind of attention." She pointed at the sliced tires of my car. "We already have Johnny," she said seriously. "Listen, I don't like this," I said. "I don't want to be trapped in some nutjob's basement a few hours from now, chained up against a wall and covered in blood, and think back on how I should have done something different. I think the safe plan is to leave this place now, right now. Let's just grab some drinks and cigarettes and whatever from the store and hike back towards the highway on the main route. Maybe we'll see someone on the walk, but we'll definitely find help on the highway." She thought about it for a fraction of a second, then nodded. "Okay, whatever," she said. "Let's go." The plan worked at first. Betty ran into the package store while I kept watch outside, looking up and down the streets for any signs of movement. I saw nothing, but from the slashed tires, I assumed we were being watched. Whoever they were, they knew when we were far enough away to vandalize the car. A moment later, Betty came out with a plastic bag. I saw 9 or 10 cartons of cigarettes in it and some plastic nips of Jack Daniels. She also had Coca-Cola and some water. "I thought you were grabbing a pack of cigarettes," I said, narrowing my eyes.
10 cartons? Why do we need 10 cartons for a 5-mile hike?
We don't need them, she said. But you know, they're expensive down in Connecticut. Much cheaper in this town.
Yeah, I guess you can't beat free, I said, reaching into the bag and taking out a pack.
We started walking out of the town in silence. I didn't even hear any animal stir. The regular buzz of the insects that chirped and squeaked throughout the White Mountains were missing here. It gave the town a supernatural eeriness, as if we had wandered into an apocalyptic wasteland where even the crickets had died. To break the monotony, I lit a cigarette. The flick of the lighter and the soft tread of our footsteps were the only sounds we could.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Could hear for miles. As we got further down Main Street, the shops and houses started to thin out. Soon after we passed the church, both sides of the street had turned to forest, and only an occasional house or farm broke the endless trees. The downtown area couldn't be more than a quarter mile long, but this town and the surrounding forest felt like it went on forever.
This is really spooky, Betty said, shattering the silence.
I was glad for a break, though I felt eyes on me as she spoke, as if we had somehow violated the sanctity of a graveyard with laughter.
I have never experienced anything as weird as this, I said, whispering and getting close to Betty. I noticed she also spoke in a quiet voice, and she constantly glanced behind and around. She smoked a lot of cigarettes, nervously lighting one after the other, and she drank 3 of the nips on the way, chasing them down with Coke. I took one myself and downed it. The burning liquid seemed to revive me somehow and clear my head. I chugged some soda to get the taste out of my mouth. Betty had opened her mouth to say something else when the screaming erupted from all around us. The sun had long disappeared behind the mountains, and we were surrounded by thick curtains of darkness. I couldn't see more than a few feet into the forest. Betty gripped my hand tightly.
Okay, now I am really freaked out, she whispered into my ear.
We had both stopped and stood, holding hands as shrieks echoed through the trees. The light breeze carried a smell that nearly made me gag, the smell of decay and blood.
Do you think it's a fox or a fisher cat or something?
I shook my head silently, then leaned close to her. We're going to run, I said, back towards the town. It's a lot closer. Ready?
Go!
We started sprinting away, our footsteps bouncing off the pavement far too loud. The screaming drew closer, and something broke through the outer boundary of the woods. With twigs crunching and branches snapping, I saw a silhouette emerge into the road to my left. The smell of rotting flesh seemed overwhelming now. I only saw her for a second, but I knew, in that moment, that she wasn't human. It looked like a woman, or at least, like the corpse of one. But she was clearly alive in some form, running and shrieking, sending out wails of pure agony and horror. The eyes snapped onto me. I met them for a brief moment. Even in the dim light of the moon and the stars, I could see they were pure white, without pupils or irises. And yet, they seemed to see everything, even in the deepening shadows.
Long, stringy black hair ran down over her face and down her back. Papery skin hung tightly to the skull, and the mouth hung wide open, inhumanly wide, like the tendons and ligaments holding the jaw to the skull had been cut. The huge black pit of her mouth emanated those screams constantly, as if she didn't need to breathe. On the body, parts of the skin were missing. I could see the gore and bones beneath, where the thin, fragile skin had broken. Purple and black sores shone from these spots. The long, skeletal hand of the woman ended up claw-like fingers, with the nails blackened and the bones sticking out at the end of each digit. She ran fast, gaining on us. And she wasn't alone. I could see dozens more bodies breaking through the tree line now, a deafening howling emanating from them as they ran. I was breathing hard by this point. I could see the first buildings of the town up ahead. We had to only make it another 100 paces, and then we could lock ourselves in and barricade the doors and windows. I didn't dare look back, but I heard the screaming just behind me. I felt a soft swipe across my back, the sharp, bony fingers dragging across the shirt for a brief moment. It gave me another adrenaline rush, and I pushed myself forward with all my will, feeling my heart beating far too fast in my chest. I began to feel lightheaded and see flashes of white light every time I blinked. I knew I would pass out if I had to go much further. I hadn't gone running in over 10 years, probably since I was in high school, but I ran for my life just the same. Betty was in better shape than me, and she had gained some ground. She glanced back as she sprinted down the middle of the dark street. I saw her point to the church. It stood just up ahead, the doors already opened, as if waiting for us, as if it knew we would be back. She veered sharply to the right, and I followed close behind, panting and sweating like a madman. The doors were so close now. The shrieking behind me had joined by a few others. With the last of my strength, I began an all-out sprint, hoping I wouldn't trip over something and go flying into a car. It would mean the end of me. Of that, I was certain. We ran through the doors into the church. I turned around and saw the creatures had gone. Their screaming cut off as soon as we had entered, and now I saw no sign of them. It was as if they had vanished. I shut the doors of the church just the same, turning a deadbolt to lock them. Betty had her phone out, turning on the flashlight app to help me see in the dark church. I would have to also check for auxiliary entrances, but it was a start just the same. And then I turned, and I saw what Betty had already noticed. The desecration of this holy place. The statue of Jesus on his cross had been broken off at the bottom of the beam, and now hung upside down from a rope that extended to the high ceiling, dozens of feet above our heads. His face had been slashed and cut, his nose and eyes now missing, and on the front of his chest, I saw a strange symbol carved deeply into the wood with what looked to be blood. The sigil looked like an upside-down triangle within a larger upside-down triangle, and had lines carved out of the sides of the bottom. Connected to the lines of the larger triangle at the bottom, I saw a line curving like a J. And on the other side, another line curving like a backwards J. The lines extended outwards, carving over a V. Around the sigil sat a thick black circle. It definitely seemed magical, like something from a medieval textbook on witchcraft.
"That's the sigil of Lucifer," my wife said quietly.
"How do you know that?" I asked. And she shrugged.
"I read a couple of books on black magic when I was a teen," she said. "That one stuck with me for some reason.
That symbol, it's eerie. I never forgot it.
I looked over at the font at the front of the church. Instead of holy water, it was filled with blood.
I guess no one's crossing themselves in here today, I said, trying to break the harsh terror that threatened to overwhelm us.
Then, as Betty moved her light around, I realized we weren't alone in here. People sat in pews, their heads bowed, silently praying. Dozens of people were in here with us, yet they made no noise. No one turned their heads to look at us or say anything. An icy chill ran down my spine. I turned to Betty and pointed at the people.
Yeah, I see them,
she whispered, and began to creep slowly forward. I took out my phone and turned on my light as well, moving silently a few feet behind her. I shone the light at the first pew of people and gasped. They all had their throats cut. A waterfall of thick, coagulated blood stained the front of their bodies. The smell hit me at once, an overwhelming odor of rotting meat and iron.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Gagged, turning to Wretch. Betty pulled me towards the back of the church. I searched for any other entrances, locking the ancient deadbolts on the doors. We ended up going to the rectory in the back, sitting on the priest's couch. There were no bodies in here, and no smell but the musty scent of an old building and books.
Well,
Betty said, turning to me, barely concealing the terror in her eyes.
It looks like we found the townspeople, some of them anyways.
I said nothing, but instead put my phone down and sat in the darkness with her, putting my arm around her while she cried.
Part 2. As she wept into my shoulder, I heard the sirens start up again. It sounded muffled inside the church, but still vibrated the floors and the walls all around us. I didn't know what the siren signified, but I doubted it was anything good. After all, the last time the siren had sounded, we had ran into something horrible. Dozens of walking corpses with white eyes that seemed to look at us with thirst and hunger. But I had no plans. Not anymore. We were unarmed and seemed to be in a relatively safe place. My main thought was that we should hide in here until morning, when daylight arrived and made travel safer. We could always try jumping the police car, or even finding a car where the tires weren't totally flat, and jumping that to drive it out of town. I had seen dozens of car keys in the diner, and one of them had to fit with one of the more reliable cars that were parked on the street. if I had to. I'd drive my car in the rims as fast as it would go and then abandon it once we were outside the town's limits. Anything would be better than being trapped here another night. The siren wound down again, its haunting echoes dissipating in the night. I turned to Betty, flipping my phone over to get some light. "Let's search the place," I said. "Maybe we could find a weapon. This is a priest's living quarters, I think, so that means there should be at least knives for cooking somewhere around here. If we're lucky, maybe the guy even had a gun." This was a thought I had considered already, going from house to search for guns. This was, after all, rural New Hampshire deep in the mountains, where people liked the hunt, and where farmers would likely keep some sort of shotgun or rifle for pests. If we were armed, our chances of survival would rise exponentially, at least so I hoped. For all I knew, ammo would be as useless as a squirt gun against those things that we had seen coming out of the forest. My wife wiped away her tears. Then she reached into her purse and pulled out her keychain. She dropped it into my hand. I looked at it for a moment, confused. "That black thing," she said, pointing at a small canister connected to the chain, "is pepper spray. I don't know how effective it is, and I've had it for nearly 10 years. It may not even work at this point. I don't think pepper spray really goes bad, though. It should still be able to stop someone in their tracks." "Yeah, someone as in a human," I said. "We don't even know if those things feel pain. Their eyes..." I didn't need to finish the sentence. She had seen their strange cataract eyes. She knew as well as I did that we weren't dealing with the living. I got up, sighing. I took her hand and helped her up. We grabbed our phones, and she grabbed her purse and plastic bag of goodies, lighting a cigarette with trembling fingers. It took her nearly 3 tries to get it lit. She reminded me of a Parkinson's patient in his last days. We explored the rectory area in silence, finding a small kitchen. As I suspected, it had a knife block with some long, wicked blades. I took one for myself and gave one to Betty. We went back to the rectory and searched every drawer and closet, but I could find no sign of a gun or ammo. Feeling slightly better now that I at least had a knife, we went back to the chapel. I shone my phone's light across the immense chamber, and my heart leapt into my throat. The front doors stood wide open now, letting the dim moonlight stream into the nave. Even worse, the corpses were all gone. And while we were in the rectory, someone had used the blood to write a message across the wall, covering the stained glass windows and aged beams and letters 5 feet tall. "The Black Sun Awakens." As I stood there, gaping, not sure what to do, Betty grabbed my arm and pointed outside the door. "Look," she cried, a note of triumph in her voice. "Someone's coming." I saw with excitement that she was right. I felt a surge of hope rise in me so powerful that I felt lightheaded. Headlights streamed down the dark street, casting long, twisted shadows across the buildings. I grabbed her hand and we ran outside without a second thought. The car traveled slowly down Main Street, coming from the same direction we had originally came. We ran out into the middle of the road, and I started waving my arms frantically, trying to get the driver's attention. A chubby old man pulled up beside us, looking at us with suspicion and narrowing his eyes. I gestured for him to put his window down. He hesitated for a long moment, looking between me and my wife, and then lowered it 1/8 of an inch. I heard all his doors lock as he quickly pressed the button.
"Does anyone live here?"
he asked. I need gas. The map said there's a gas station here. Supposed to be 24 hours, but there's no one inside. It doesn't look like anyone's been inside for weeks. All the food in the refrigerators had started to rot, and there's not even electricity, so... He trailed off. I didn't even know where to start. I certainly didn't want to start rambling about walking corpses and messages painted in blood. But Betty, always my smarter and better half, thought quickly instead.
We had a massive electrical failure, she said, lying smoothly and smiling at him with her disarming charm. I saw the old man relax slightly, though he still glanced over at me with suspicion from time to time. We really need help. Our car broke down, and everyone besides us was already evacuated.
Yeah, the old man said skeptically. Makes sense, I guess. Okay, so you both live here? I nodded, building on the lie. Yes, we used to, but we missed the evacuation. Can you please give us a ride just to the highway? I said, giving him what I hoped to be a neighborly smile. He frowned, the lines on his face deepening. What's your name, friend? He asked, not answering my question and refusing to roll down his window any more than the tiny crack he had made. I'm Johnny Redfern, and this is my wife, Betty. Please, sir, we really need your help. How come you didn't just walk out of here? He asked. The highway is only a 10-minute drive. It's not exactly around the corner, but it shouldn't take you more than a couple hours to walk it. I swore inwardly. Of course we had to get the old man who was as sharp as a tack. If he kept talking to us, he would inevitably pick up on our lies. In fact, he probably already had. The story didn't make much sense, especially when he kept driving and saw the messages painted in blood on the police station. And, well, I'm not saying you're being dishonest or anything, God forbid, but if people were evacuated, why are all the cars still here? Did they walk out? Did they all take a bus? It sure looks like they've been here for a while. I froze, not knowing what to say in response. I looked over at Betty, her pretty dark eyes narrowing with concentration as she stared at the old man.
Sir, what's your name?
She asked him politely. She changed her face in a moment, back to the beautiful and friendly smile she always used as her job as a real...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Real estate agent for difficult customers. I'm Freddie McKenzie, he said. He looked like he considered rolling down the window to shake our hands, but instead, he quickly looked away.
Okay, please listen to me, Freddie. Something strange is going on here. We don't know what it is. We really need your help. I'm afraid if we stay in this town any longer, Something really bad is going to happen to us, Betty said, her smile fading.
Freddie's bright blue eyes shone with intelligence as he weighed her words, looking from my face to hers before frowning slightly and wrinkling his forehead.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry,
he said. I'm sure you two are very nice people, but I don't pick up hitchhikers, ever. I don't know you guys from Adam, but if you want, I can call you a tow truck when I get to the highway, or even a police officer. They could sort this mess out. I really don't know what's going on here, and I don't want to know. This is none of my business. But I wish you both good luck. He put his car back in drive and rolled his window back up, waving a friendly manner but not meeting our eyes. He pulled away at a snail's pace, going at least 10 miles under the speed limit as he drove down the road.
I should have maced him, Betty said bitterly,
watching the old man's taillights as they grew smaller.
I really should have. I thought about it, you know.
What would have that accomplished? I said.
Well, it would have made me feel better, she said.
We both laughed, an anxious and nervous release of tension that I felt I needed at that moment. A gunshot pierced the night. I jumped, almost falling on the sidewalk curb as I quickly backed off the road. I grabbed Betty to steady myself. She was looking down the road at the old man's red brake lights. They cast a bloody glow across the main street. Another gunshot rang out, and I could hear a loud hiss, as if a monstrous snake had just awakened. But it wasn't a snake. We watched Freddy's car as clouds of smoke and plumes of exhaust began rising from the engine, and the hissing grew louder. I realized something must have given in his engine when the bullet passed through. His tires looked fine, but even from this distance, I could see a puddle expanding around his car. I didn't know anything about cars, but from my meager knowledge, I assumed it was likely coolant or transmission fluid. Either one was not good.
What should we do? Betty asked, grabbing my hand tightly.
I'm not running in the direction of gunshots if that's what you're asking, I said quickly. We should take cover. Let's go back to the church for now.
What about the old man? She asked more loudly now. What's going to happen to him?
We should worry about ourselves, I yelled at her, not meaning to raise my voice. She shrank back as if I had slapped her. I stepped forward, taking her hand and whispering, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get angry.
What if he dies because we did nothing? She asked.
He did nothing to help us, I said.
Well, he was going to call for help at least. I can't really blame him for not picking up two wild-eyed strangers in a bullcrap story in the middle of an abandoned town. I kept watching his car, but he didn't get out. Do you think he was hit? She asked.
God, I don't know, I said, feeling like things were quickly spiraling out of control. Our potential rescue had turned into a potential burden. Luck was not on our side today. The old man's taillights changed as he put his car in reverse. He tried to slowly back up in our direction, but the engine made loud knocking sounds when they pressed the gas, and the thick cloud of smoke began to expand, rising up in the air in huge, billowing plumes. I heard metallic groaning sounds as the knocking died down. And then his car stopped moving, and the engine shut off by itself. He hadn't managed to reverse more than 20 feet at that time. I wondered what he was thinking at that moment, whether he thought we were part of some band of robbers who had staged a gunman up ahead. If I was in his shoes, I would feel certain that would be my first assumption. After all, who else in the town was there to blame? A secret gunman and vandal who hid in buildings or in forests. Yes, the corpses got up and moved around, but no one in their right mind would buy that story. At least not until they had seen it for themselves.
Okay, F it. Let's go get the old man out of his car and make sure he's...
I started to say. But then the siren came on again, seemingly louder and shriller than before. I covered my ears with my hands, and without thinking,
I ran forward towards the old man's car, hoping I would live to regret the decision. By the time I had ran through Main Street, the siren had started to die out again. It seemed to be getting shorter every time it ran. I didn't know what to think about that. I tried to justify it by saying perhaps the building where the siren was located ran on a generator, and they were running out of fuel, so it was to compensate. They ran the siren less and less each time. But why run it at all? There was no tornado here, no hurricanes or tsunamis. I felt like I was missing an essential piece of the puzzle. As I got within 10 feet of his car, I saw the old man moving inside, apparently unharmed. Freddy stumbled out of the driver's seat, shaking and pale. He looked at me with wide, accusing eyes. "What did you do?" he asked me. "I'm warning you, I have a gun." I looked around at his hands and next to his seat. I saw no gun, and I assumed he was bluffing. However, I wasn't going to risk my life on it. I still had a butcher's knife tucked away in the back of my pants. The blade looped through my leather belt, and had even pulled out my shirt over it so the old man wouldn't see it and get scared. I put my hands up and backed slowly away. His eyes narrowed even more, as if suspecting a trick. "Please, I'm just trying to help," I said. "My wife and I, we're not actually from here. We're from Connecticut. We came here just like you, just to stop for a minute, but someone slashed our tires, and this town has some strange things happening in it. I can't explain it. That siren, every time it goes off..." I didn't know what to say next. "I think it's a warning, or perhaps a signal. Every time it goes off, we see people walking around. Maybe they're part of a cult or some terrorist group, but we need to get the safety now. There's a church just down the street with deadbolts all over the doors. It could be blocked from the inside and maybe even barricaded. We should go there immediately. If you won't come with us, that's your decision, but I'll tell you right now, you probably won't survive out here."
"Is that a threat?" he asked,
his blue eyes blazing with anger. His chubby face reddened, and even his bald head had a crimson hue. "Okay, fine, I tried," I said, giving up and turning to leave. "Stay here and die." I started walking away, not looking back. I heard heavy footsteps slapping against the pavement, and suddenly, he was at my side walking with me. He sighed heavily, and redness slowly faded out of his face.
"I'll come with you,"
he said. "But if this is a trick, know that I intend to report all of this to the police as soon as possible."
"My friend," I said, quickening my step and starting to jog towards the church.
"If the police were coming, don't you think they'd already be here?" After we got into the church and locked all the doors, we saw dark silhouettes walking past the stained glass windows. They surrounded the church, their strange gait revealing their inhuman nature even based on their shadows. I knew it was the corpses, like the ones I had seen come out of the woods. Off in the distance, one of them started to scream, a shrill, piercing noise that carried on the wind. It sounded like she was here, standing right next to me in the church. I shuddered.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I heard a few of the corpses respond until it sounded like the shrieking came from all around the perimeter of the building. Yet they didn't try to get inside. If they had smashed through the stained glass windows, they could have easily crawled through. Yet they didn't. At least, not yet. Soon,
I heard a sound like a man crying in pain. This sound sounded far different than the empty banshee wails of the corpses. I looked through a pane of clear glass and saw the woman from the forest. The walking nightmare with the black matted hair and white cataract eyes. Next to her I saw two children, twins from the look of them, dressed in nearly identical clothing. Two little boys, holding hands and walking behind her. The skin on their faces had mostly peeled off, showing the eternally grinning skulls underneath. Their eyes had turned white with drops of thick black blood dripping down their face like tears. Their bodies looked partially decomposed, just like the woman, with sharp finger bones poking out through the skin. On their hands, I could see the tendons and ligaments and muscle underneath in places where the skin had been eaten away. In front of them, I saw a man crawling on his hands and knees out of the dark forest on the perimeter of the town. His leg looked broken, the area where his knee twisted at a 45-degree angle. Matted blood soaked into his denim. By the time I realized what I was looking at, all three had caught up with him. The woman's corpse gnarled her teeth as she grew near, biting at the air and smiling. The twins looked serene, as if they were just going to walk to the playground. They didn't hurry or run, knowing their prey was injured and doomed. The man looked back at them. An expression of sheer terror twisted his face. And then all three were on him, eating him alive from the legs and stomach. His agony-filled shrieks shattered the night. I turned away. Within a couple minutes, everything had gone quiet again. But I saw dozens more of those silhouettes passing on Main Street, or coming from the graveyard behind the church. I wondered just how many of them we were up against. Over time, Freddy warmed up to us. He seemed to realize we weren't lunatics who were going to stab him and eat his heart while praying to the serpent god in Aramaic. He ended up being much more talkative than I would have expected. When we talked to him in the car, he came across as an aloof curmudgeon who wouldn't have helped his own mother if she fell down. "You know what this reminds me of?" he said, his eyes widening, as if he was telling a ghost story around a campfire. "Roanoke. Those people disappeared without a trace." "I'm sure they just interbred with the natives," Betty said. "The Mary Celeste was similar to this, though. The crew just disappeared from the ship in the middle of the ocean. No one knows where they went." The two of them acted much more relaxed than I felt. My nerves felt jangled, and I just kept waiting for the next siren. Or maybe the gunman who shot out Freddy's engine block would show up, armed with a semi-automatic rifle and carrying buckets of blood around with him to paint messages wherever he felt like it. I could see him in my mind's eye, a nut job in a ski mask. Two dark eyes glaring out at me, his heart filled with bloodlust and murder. "These people didn't really disappear, though, did they?" I said, turning to look at them. "We found the corpses of a couple dozen of them here in the church, and we had seen more of them outside." "But where's the rest of them?" Betty asked. Freddy looked at her, raising an eyebrow. "There's way more than a few dozen people living in this town. Where's all the bodies? Maybe the rest of the town isn't even dead."
"You didn't tell me that someone staged bodies in this church," Freddy said accusingly, looking at Betty. She shrugged.
"So?"
"So maybe." He lowered his voice. "This place is haunted. Did you ever think of that?" Betty laughed at that, and even I cracked a smile. "My friend," I said. "This whole town is apparently haunted. I wouldn't worry about the church." I don't know how much time passed, but after we talked for a few more minutes, we ended up just sitting there in silence. Betty and I smoked cigarettes, and Freddy drank some of the whiskey she had grabbed. "Just to steel my nerves," he said, and looked like he needed it. He was still shaking, and he would often get up and pace in a circle, muttering to himself and sending dirty looks towards the blood-stained pews. Ever since we told him about the bodies, he had seemed much more uncomfortable and frightened. I knew how he felt. I felt the same relentless and terror within me. It seemed like we were trying to hide in the closet as the house burned down around us. But what else could we do? Soon, that decision would be taken out of our hands. I realized the church seemed to be getting brighter. Freddie and Betty didn't notice for a few moments, as they had started up another conversation, this time about the sigil painted on the mutilated body of Jesus hanging upside down from the ceiling. But I noticed the lighting immediately. For a second, I thought maybe the electricity had come back on, but that the lights were just dim. Or that maybe someone was driving outside and their high beams had shone through the windows. But I quickly realized that this light had a different texture. It was almost like a black light giving off an intense purplish glow over everything it touched. Betty had gone silent, her mouth open in silent awe. Freddy rubbed his hand over his bald head, opening his mouth.
What? He said.
He stopped his pacing, nervously smoothing out his shirt. What is this? Is this some sort of stage trick? Not from me, I said, looking around the church. All the dark corners were now illuminated, shining with the eerie light. I could see the bloodstains glowing on the pews, looking almost black against the shining mahogany hue of the wood. The sigil of Lucifer shone with an intensity that dwarfed everything else in the church, however. It was so bright that I had to turn away. The light it gave off was a dark red, and when I closed my eyes, I could still see the crimson symbol burned into my sight. As I looked out the side window, I saw that the light seemed to be coming from the forest at the edge of town, deep behind thick groves of evergreens and muddy swamps. It felt almost like looking into a second sun, and I quickly moved away from the window, my vision still swarming with bright dots and white light. The strange slogan I had seen painted on the police station came into my mind. We followed the black sun. Was that what they meant? I want to go investigate, I said. They looked at me as if I was crazy. We can't just stay here forever. Maybe we're supposed to figure this place out or stop what's happening. And who, may I ask, gave you this divine order? God? Freddy asked, smiling. No one is supposed to do anything except survive. If you want to die... He never got to finish, as the siren sound had started up again. I realized as I listened intently to the shrill, deafening wail that it appeared to be coming from the same place as this eerie light that flooded the town. It shook the floors and walls, and caused the upside-down statue of Jesus to start moving from side to side, swaying like a pendulum. As soon as it had stopped, I heard crashing at the back door. It sounded as if dozens of people threw their bodies against the locked doors that led out to the rear entrance towards the graveyard. Yet no one tried to break down the front doors. Without thinking, I undid the front door's deadbolt and ran outside, not looking back to see if they would follow me. With the light flooding in, I could see much more of the town illuminated. Looking into the cop car, I realized it was not empty at all. The body of a police officer sat in the driver's seat, lying sideways as his head rested on the center console. He had a single gunshot through his temple, and I saw the gun still in his hand. I opened the driver's side door.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And a horrible odor of rotten eggs, rancid meat, and feces hit me immediately. I held my breath, trying not to gag. I took the gun from his hand and quickly undid his belt, pulling it off. I turned and saw Freddy and Betty behind me, pale and watchful, looking terrified as they continuously glanced back at the church. "Hide," I said quickly. I got on my belly and slid under the cop car, not looking back to see if they would follow my orders. If they didn't, they would probably die. As soon as I was underneath it, a gun in one hand and a heavy police belt with mace, a taser and extra ammo in the other, I saw bodies stream out the front door of the church. Many were no more than skeletons with some tendons and gore still clinging to their bones. Yet they were still able to walk. They moved quickly, looking around with empty eye sockets and rotting faces. Betty had, by this point, crawled underneath beside me. I turned and saw her watching the corpses with wide, girlish eyes. I didn't see where Freddy had gone. The corpses emerging from the church split off into groups, going in different directions. After a few minutes, none remained on the street, at least not from what I could see. Looking back and forth quickly, the pistol extended in my right hand. I slid out from underneath the police car. I took the weapons and ammo off the belt, giving Betty a taser and another canister of mace. "Give the extra mace to Freddy," I whispered. "Where is Freddy?" A half smile crossed her face, and she pointed to the dumpster in the alley behind us. Quietly, I walked over and opened the lid, peering inside. I saw Freddy, maggots writhing in his hair, a banana peel stuck to his chest. The smell from inside the dumpster was bad, though not nearly as bad as the rotting corpse smell from the police car. Freddy climbed out, grumbling and wiping himself off. Betty gave him the cop's mace canister, and I started walking towards the source of the eerie black light, hoping to find answers. Though this happened 3 months ago, I still questioned my decision that day, for that was the moment when I sealed our fates, the moment I set my mind towards walking towards the black sun. I ensured we would see hell itself.
Part 3. "I really don't want to go in there," Freddy said, his old man's face wrinkling in fear. He grabbed my hand tightly. "Please, listen to me. You don't want to go in there either. Have you seen what's happening in the town?"
"I doubt we will survive much longer trying to hide," I said. "Whatever's happening here, it seems to be speeding up. At first, it was just a few corpses, guarding the road out of town. Now it's a dozen of them, and it seems like those in the graveyard are all changed now, walking around and hunting. What will you do when it's hundreds of corpses streaming through every building and road? Where will you hide?" He opened his mouth to say something, then closed it again. "Look, I can't force you to come with us," I said. "If you don't want to, you could stay here alone. Betty gave you the pepper spray, and I'm sure you'll have no problem fighting off hundreds of hungry walking corpses with it, right?" He sighed heavily.
"I'll come with you fine," he said. "But if we get ambushed, I'm running. I should have never come to this damn town. I knew it. I had enough gas to get home, but I thought to myself, why not? It's cheaper around here." Now my car's totaled. I'm trapped without any way to call for help. And you want me to go into that creepy forest to inspect a bizarre light?
You think we want to be here? Betty asked. Johnny's just trying to find us a way out, or a way to survive. We already tried running, but the corpses have surrounded the roads. We tried hiding in the church, but they ended up breaking down the door. This is our last option. If it fails...
She didn't need to finish the sentiment. We all understood what she meant. My stomach was growling from not having eaten all day, and I felt tired and weak. I ignored all of it, and immediately started walking towards the edge of the woods. After a few moments, I heard their footsteps close behind me. As we got closer to the black sun, the forest changed from the idyllic firs, junipers, and white pine in the forest into a monstrous wasteland, something out of a nightmare. The needles of the evergreens and the decomposing leaves and dark soil of the ground transformed into a thick, scaly covering. I shone my light, kneeling close to it. To my horror, I saw what looked like blood vessels passing through, expanding and contracting slightly as some unseen heart pumped black fluid into the destroyed earth. The crust itself looked dark red, and it covered everything on the ground. I tried knocking on the crust with my knuckles. It felt slightly sticky and as hard as concrete. The trees and plants had also changed. The bark of the trees had turned a pale, ghostly white. Their leaves and needles had fallen off, and the branches stood like skeletal arms, stretching upwards to the sky. Thick rivulets of black fluid dripped from the bark and branches of all the trees. The ferns and pricker bushes and other small plants had also turned white, as pale as writhing maggots. Small drops of the black fluid fell from the changed leaves of the ferns and shrubs, dripping onto the ground.
"This reminds me of Kudzu in a way," Freddy said, standing behind my wife and me. His eyes were wide, and he kept gazing around uncertainly. He didn't look at us, though he constantly glanced back towards Main Street, as if thinking about booking back and leaving us alone.
"What's Kudzu?" my wife asked, still as curious as ever.
"It's a plant in Asia. It grows in the south a lot, and it takes over whole areas. It's like a vine that climbs everything and suffocates all the other plants," he said. "This looks a little different than Kudzu," I said sarcastically. I saw Freddy's knuckles turn white from gripping the mace canister as a stick snapped in the distance. He was terrified, and it would likely only take the smallest thing to send him running. I knew exactly how he felt. The light from the black sun became so bright as we walked forwards that I no longer needed my phone. Trying to conserve the battery, I turned the flashlight off and put it away, seeing Betty do the same. Freddy followed behind us, hesitant. As we got closer to the source of the mystery, his anxiety seemed to grow.
"You know what they say about stragglers, Freddy?" I asked, trying to break the grim mood. He shook his head.
"Stragglers get eaten first. After that, his pace quickened, and he stuck close to us. I hadn't seen a single animal yet, or heard a cricket or a bird. There were no bats flying around the dead, bleeding trees. No owls hooting in the distance, or mosquitoes swarming around us. I wondered where the animals had gone. Most likely, I thought to myself, they had fled, unlike me. It seemed to me that they were the smart ones in this decision. As if conjured by the thought, I saw movement below a thick cluster of ferns. I put my hand up, the universal signal for stop. My wife and Freddy paused without a word. I got to my knees, taking my phone back out and turning the light on.
I shined it under the leaves. I saw a mutilated possum, still clinging to life. Surrounding it were tiny creatures. They weren't like any life form I had ever seen on Earth. When the light fell on them, they started chittering, excitedly racing.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Raising their voices and turning their tiny faces towards me. They were no bigger than a Barbie doll, but with dozens of them in a pack, they had apparently taken down an animal much larger than themselves. They had gray chitinous shells with glowing white eyes. Sharp crab-like pincers covered in fresh blood clicked open and closed rapidly. Their tiny legs curved outwards, ending in razor-like feet. Their bow-legged gait made them waver from side to side as they ran around the possum, turning their tiny heads towards me from time to time and clicking their small mouths. The possum was nearly dead and didn't even try to run or fight. It languidly raised a paw, or its head, and then the attack would begin again. The light in its eyes had gone out. Dozens of deep gashes showed all over its body. Its ragged breathing would stop in a few seconds, then start again once one of the tiny creatures shoved its claws inside, opening a tiny mouth filled with fangs to suck the blood that poured out. I quickly backed away. Betty had seen it too, and the look of horror crossed her face. "What are those things?" she asked. "I have no idea," I said. Freddy didn't seem the least bit interested in seeing the creatures or the dying possum. He had stayed back a few feet, constantly checking all directions as if inspecting an ambush. Without a word, I kept walking, not wanting to see such a horrible and sad scene. I considered sending a bullet into the possum's head, to put it out of its misery. I looked over at Betty, who always loved animals, and noticed a tear rolling down her cheek. I realized I could see something through the pale skeletal trees. It looked like a clearing, and in the center, I could just barely make out a huge orb, floating and spinning over the crusted red ground. An intense purplish-black light swirled and jumped inside of it, sending out bolts of lightning into the surrounding field. Yet there was no sound, no thunder or crashing of branches. I pointed, and Betty raised her head, her mouth agape in wonder. Freddy apparently had already seen it. All the color had drained from his face, and I thought, for a moment, he might faint. "I think we're near," I said. "That must be the Black Sun." As I walked out into the clearing, I felt eyes on me. I thought I caught glimpses of white eyes behind the trees and bushes, but whenever I turned to look, they were gone. Nevertheless, I easily realized we weren't alone in the clearing. It extended for nearly a quarter mile, with the Black Sun directly in the middle. Thick black blood vessels as wide as a man pulsed all around my feet. Thousands of them embedded into the dark red crust of the earth. And as my eyes adjusted to the intense black light, I realized more the townspeople were here, tortured and dying. It looked like we had found the missing. They were impaled on sharpened sticks 10 feet tall that surrounded the Black Sun in a circle. They loomed over me, choking out blood and pleading. I saw men, women, and children all dying or dead. The one nearest to me, an old woman still wearing the tattered rags of her clothing, raised her head and looked down at me, her eyes white and dead.
Get out while you still can,
she said, coughing up blood that dribbled down her chin. The stake had been driven between her legs, and the sharp end rose out of her left shoulder.
He's mad. He's mad. Oh, God. He's kill us all. We should have done something. We should have tried.
Her eyelids started fluttering, and she began to shake and seize on the stake. Within seconds, she had died, her head falling down limply, still staring at me, her eerie wide eyes still open. I didn't notice before, but I saw the black pulsating blood vessels extending to each one of the victims. They had crawled up the stakes and wrapped around the feet and legs of each person. I couldn't see the bottom of their bodies, but I saw that the nightmarish arteries had eaten holes inside each of the bodies. They seemed to suck on the blood, draining the victims as they died.
"And you still think we should come here, Johnny?" Freddy asked in my ear. "Do me a favor, please. If we get captured, just put a bullet in my head. I don't want to end up like that."
He motioned to the old woman, who still stared blankly down at us, looking at me like some scarecrow from hell. I didn't answer, gazing around the hundreds of bodies that surrounded the black sun like the spokes on a wheel. Standing next to the orb, I saw what looked like a little boy, no older than 9 or 10. But he was transformed, no longer human. His skin looked translucent. Black veins and arteries stood out on his neck and face, and his eyes were white like the others, and yet different. They weren't the dull cataract white of a corpse, but shone with their own inner luminosity, like twin stars floating in a void.
"My name is Kindred," the boy said, smiling. "I think you arrived just in time. The Black Sun is almost done feeding for now, and it will send out its call in a moment. I congratulate you on making it so far. The others didn't do so well. The Black Sun has a corrupting influence, let's say."
His grin widened at this. "But it doesn't seem to affect the three of you as much. Now, why do you think that is?" None of us answered him. I gripped the gun tightly, feeling my finger on the trigger. It gave me a sense of power and relief, even though I didn't know if it would have any effect on such a creature. Betty was the first to speak, stepping forward. She didn't stutter or tremble as she stared into the boy's eyes.
"Do you live here? Where's your family?" she asked.
The boy's smile seemed to widen further, stretching inhumanly across his small face.
"My family is dead," he said. "Thank the Lord Lucifer for small favors. My father was a terrible man. He used to beat me mercilessly or choke me into unconsciousness. One day he went too far, however, and he killed me. My mother covered it up. But I was offered a way to return the favor. Lucifer came to me in a vision as I died at the bottom of the stairs, my neck broken, paralyzed from the fall. He told me that if I gave him my soul, I could come back in power and glory. Those who hurt me would fall first. The neighbors and congregation that had ignored my pleas for help would suffer also, and the church, full of hypocrites and liars, would become a testament of my becoming and his power. My father, a police officer who helped to cover up my death, was the first to go. When the Black Sun appeared in the forest, it began to twist their minds. His mind, already damaged, was easy to push over the edge. Lucifer convinced him to end his own life, and he shot himself in his car. As the Black Sun grew in power, it brought the dead back to life, an army for me to use in my becoming. Some of the townspeople tried to hide in the church, but the Black Sun put them to sleep,
and I came through and cut their throats one by one in the pews. Now it expands, and as its power grows, the dead rise further and further away. Soon all the corpses in this town will follow my command, except for, of course, those needing to feed the Black Sun, these puppets on the stakes. He motioned over to the hundreds of impaled bodies. Then he closed his eyes, and the Black Sun began to grow. Its orb grew, and the dark, silent lightning began to strike the impaled bodies and trees with a feverish intensity. I had to turn my head away, but I still saw the branching lightning strikes even through my closed eyes. Kindred didn't flinch, but instead seemed to feed off the energy it put out. His smile grew wider.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And his wide eyes seemed to burn with an inner light. It was as if he could see a fire of white flames inside my head, or perhaps a sun. "We've had to feed it," he said. "And after it's fed, it sleeps. But its slumber shortens with every cycle, and the energy it puts out grows. Every time it awakens, it brings back the dead in an ever-widening circle. Soon, we will have an army of fearless soldiers. Soldiers who obey every command regardless of the danger of death. For what do they have to fear?" I saw corpses walking out of the forest, forming a circle around the Black Sun. The woman in the black, matted hair and wide eyes I had seen earlier stood next to Kindred. She put her hand on his shoulder, and he looked up at her fondly.
"My mother. She's much more useful in death. She never could stand up to my father. But everything happens for a reason."
He said this last part wistfully, a slight smile returning to his boyish, mutated face. Then the Black Sun began to make a shrill noise. An ear-splitting siren-like sound that made me back up instinctively. I realized that what we had heard in town was not a siren at all, but the call of this satanic orb, spinning deep within the forest. A smell like ozone filled the clearing, mixing with the rotting odor of the dead. Kindred didn't seem to mind the noise or the smells. His face had returned to the same placid, expressionless state it had been when I'd first seen him. The siren call died down much faster this time, and soon, the forest had returned to silence. For a moment, we stared at each other, his burning white eyes meeting mine. Then he turned away, giving an apathetic wave in our direction.
"Kill them all," he said. "Feed them to the sun."
As soon as he had turned, I raised the pistol and fired. The first shot went low, and it caught him in the knee. He cried out, a very human sound, falling onto the crushed red ground. The army of undead he had summoned rushed forwards towards us. I pulled out the knife and threw it to Freddy.
"Better be ready," I said quickly, and then they were on us.
I shot the black-haired woman in the head, the one Kindred had called his mother, and she fell backwards. Thick clotted blood and gore exploding out the back of her head. Freddy stabbed with the knife, hitting a tall man's corpse in the eye. With a sickening sound, he pulled it out, sending driplets of blood scattering in all directions. But a dozen hands grabbed him, pulling down as he screamed for help. I shot the last few rounds into the heads of those nearest. But for each one I killed, another three would swarm in and take their place. I tried to run forwards, towards Kindred, but hands grabbed me from all directions. The strength of those hands quickly stopped me in my tracks. In the chaos, Betty escaped, crawling under their grasping hands and through decomposing skeletal legs. They were focused on us, those with the weapons, and she used this opportunity to run. She sprinted towards Kindred, who was healing quickly. The blood had already stopped pouring from the bullet wound in his leg, and he was slowly rising to his feet, scowling and furious. In horror, I watched her as she tackled his small body, and they went flying into the black sun. For a moment, nothing happened. They seemed suspended on the surface, defying gravity, Betty's mouth an O a surprise. Kindred's a look of pure hatred. And then, there was an explosion of light and heat, and a gateway opened up in front of my eyes. On the other side, I saw a vast, terrifying landscape. Rocky cliffs extended up to the sky. Red blood clouds rained fire and lava down on the dead rocks below. Thousands of people swarmed across the barren landscape, burning, screaming, their skin melting off and their hair on fire. But as soon as they had fallen and stopped moving, they would heal in a matter of seconds. Then it would start again, and they would rise, trying to escape the fire. Then the portals started to close, narrowing, shrinking. I screamed for my wife, telling her to get out of there, to run. But my words caught in my throat, and soon, it had shrunk to a pinpoint of violet-purplish light. Seconds later, it was gone, and the corpses holding me fell limply to the ground, landing on their faces and backs, their eyes shutting. I was left alone with Freddy, horrified, screaming for my wife. But in my heart, I knew I would never see her again. The black sun had taken her, as it had taken the lives of so many others. I cursed Kindred, cursed the sun and the townspeople and his father. Surrounded by hundreds of rotting corpses, we started the long walk back to town in silence. My tears feeling cold on my cheeks.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.